nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death.
Evil is real. Evil is real. I know. Our cause is just.
And I believe we're making some progress there
in the development of a system for those who believe in violence and murder and mayhem.
Okay, I'm talking to you. I'm talking about Doug and Robin right now. We just went over basically all the stuff that had gone on with the letters and the computer. We covered pretty much what happened after you came home. And, you know, I just wanted to get both of y'all together on the phone because, you know, this is something that, in my mind, is going on with hundreds of thousands of people in America. A lot of families are going through this. And, you know, the reality is when guys come back home, you know, the family is just not able to come back together again. Is there anything you guys want to say together about what happened? Any comments?
I'll say most of all that, you know, is that I know that the PTSD, the whole war effort itself had, you know, greatly affected my attitude when I came back home and how I had treated Robin. I mean, it was, it was very difficult for me to be able to accept it, and, you know, after being gone for so long, for me to accept the love and things of this nature, you know, from her, and it was very difficult all the way around, you know, and I, even to this day, you know, I still love her and still care for her very much, but it's just as hard to imagine, you know, having her sleep in the same bed again, and you know, with everything that we've already been through, you know, it's just one of those difficult things that, that combat changes a person, and it greatly affects everybody that's around that person.
Now, if the war hadn't come up and you hadn't been over in combat, do you think your marriage would still be going right now?
Yeah, I do.
So it's pretty much devastated everything about your life after you came back. You just can't get back into any kind of normal functioning in life.
Yeah, that's the hard part is, you know, getting back to, you know, the normal functioning, with all the stuff that's going on. I mean, the physical and the mental, it's hard to get back into any kind of a normal lifestyle.
Now, Robin, let me ask you something. Without him around right now, how different is your life?
My life is very, very, very different. I live with my stepdad. I drive my stepdad's car. You know, I'm working part-time. It's hard. It's hard.
So it's pretty much devastated your life as well. It's not just Doug. It's pretty much you will not have that routine you set up for 11 years now.
Yeah, right. It's hard.
Okay, and, you know, I've pretty much covered about all that I think I can do on this without making it too long for people to, you know, kind of catch hold of, but, you know, from what you've seen, both of you together, if you guys had been an active duty family, would this have been different coming back, possibly, with the support group and the support group while you were in Iraq?
I think so, because, you know, when the soldier goes, they have more for the families to do. They have more interaction with the families on base. When soldiers come home on active duty, then, you know, they are counseled, the families counseled together. The reservists and National Guard don't get it.
Well, and especially too, is that, you know, lot different being on base, and being around active duty family support group.
Okay, yeah, and do you think that's happening with a lot of reservists that are getting mobilized, you know, especially if they transfer to another unit, that they're getting cut off from that chain of support?
Well, yeah, because, see, here's the thing is, you know, like reservists, when they started activating people and whatnot, I mean, they were pulling reservists from other states, and, you know, individual soldiers, and they would take them from their unit and put them with another unit. Well, they, you know, they didn't know, no, they didn't know anybody in that unit. And the same way with the National Guard. I mean, they were pulling soldiers from other units, to fill vacancies, you know, and to build that unit up to strength so they could send that unit overseas.
Right, and that would fall under, like, the individual readiness strength program, right? If somebody had a man specific job to the unit, they would just grab him wherever he was open, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and you know, well, here's the thing is, you know, even that job that they had, you know, that job wasn't being utilized all that well. I mean, all that much, because, you know, they would be a clerk, but as I've said before, you know, they would be used in another status in another form, such as being an EMT, you know, or running convoy support or something.
You know, you pretty much said your life has changed, but would you actually say it's probably changed irrevocably? You're not going to be able to go back to what was going on before?
Maybe.
Like, just for the rest of your life, I mean, everything is going to be different about your daily routine from now on.
Yeah. Everything's
going
to be different, you know? With Doug for 11 years, and then, you know, not being together anymore, you know, not talking to him as much as we did, but granted, we're talking now. Life has changed, and, you know, I don't know, it's sad.
Yeah, because I just know that this is, you know, a tragedy going on a daily basis. There's just a whole bunch of reservists and National Guardsmen from Texas and Georgia that just came home, probably 20,000 of them, and at this time they will not have support. They're going back from active duty to, hey, here we go, welcome back to Texas. So, you know, that's just probably a reality for at least 100,000 soldiers right now coming home or going back over. Well, I'm going to finish this up. I think I've pretty much got enough. Now, would you like to see the families just make a general offer about bringing the troops home? I mean, for the ones that are afraid to say anything and have that conviction, would you like to see you guys and them join together? Because, you know, there's a group called Military Families Speak Out that's been doing this, and I know for a fact they've had about 20,000 new members in the last year. I mean, what would you like to see that become a national movement?
Yeah, I would.
I think it would be important to see that as a national movement. I mean, it would be, you know, the military has, you know, routinely not had a focus on family. They don't stop and think of, you know, they haven't stopped and thought about the families and what goes on with them and things like that, you know. And have made life really, really hard on the families, you know. So I think that if you had a group of people, a group of families to stand up and say, hey, you know, the military needs to change their policies, you know, a little bit more towards the families, you know, and the National Guard and Reservists and the whole nine yards, I would definitely like to see some kind of a movement, you know, to start trying to at least, you know, bring an awareness to the fact of, you know, hey, families are, you know, definitely in need of, you know, having more support and things of this nature. So, yeah, I think it would be very important to have an uprising or, you know, at least them picking up and saying, hey, let's discuss these matters a little bit more.
Right, and, the general outcry right now is if you don't do that, I think a lot of families are afraid that if they do that, they'll be either branded as, they've been trying to say that about military families, that they're actually disgracing their own standing soldiers while they're on duty. But, you know, I think that if people realized it was okay, even if they were still for the war, to say, hey, look, there are these problems and this has to be taken care of, you know, I see the fear of that, and they generate that on Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, and, you know, you watch Fox News and it's like, you have to toe the line, and just even if you don't believe in it, you know, the duty is there. Your son died for a great cause. Look at what he did, you know. And I think that the families need to be aware that it's not a bad thing to stand up. If something's going wrong, you know, don't let patriotism hide it from the public, I think, you know, is my point on that. That was just my pulpit. I'm sorry. That was my preach for the day.
Right.
You know, and the word, you know, it has been heated because if you look at the congressional website, the letters that are now flooding in from family members and from, you know, from people have just been overwhelming. Like the last week or so, I've been copying them off, and I think it's starting to rumble. And, you know, that leads to the, hey, you're a coward, you're a traitor. And I think that's probably the most patriotic thing somebody can do, is if there's a soldier getting killed for no reason, say, hey, look, you know, and you know, in my belief, as a Republican, and I'm on record with that, if this war causes one more death that didn't have to happen, then it needs to stop. And if that means I'm a peace activist or anybody else is, well then, I think peace is what it's all about. Peace means lack of war and lack of death to the end, and you know, the whole statement is you're a traitor for even saying stuff like that. How does that make you feel, Robin, to see that kind of thing on TV?
You know, that angers me. Yeah, the people who are saying, yeah, that you're a traitor, because you're speaking out, are ones who don't have family members over. Or if they do, you know, then they're sugarcoating it because they don't want people to see them that way. If you've had a family member over, if they've come home, even the first time, and you've noticed the change, you know, you're not going to want them to go back. You know, you're
really, once it got to the point of me volunteering to go overseas, I mean, Robin didn't know what to think when that Michelin man enlisted back in the military. She thought I was crazy. And, you know, and then after I had volunteered to go back in and went to war and come back home, I couldn't tolerate things a whole lot, you know. I wanted things to be the way that I had wanted them instead of being patient and realizing, hey, there's, you know, things that are going on. You know, it was very, very difficult. I couldn't stand death. You know, so, you know, when Robin's mom was very, very sick and was getting ready to pass on, I just couldn't stand being around, and I wasn't as sympathetic to her as I could have been. It really, really affected, you know, her and her overall status, you know. So, you know, for me, it was, you know, the secondary PTSD, you know, really needs to be brought out into the forefront and really needs to be brought out into the light to the aspect that it becomes a national movement for the families of soldiers coming back home, and, you know, that there be more counseling available for this. I think that's probably the most important part, is that there be more counseling for the families when they come back home, individually and together as a family.
Okay, now would you guys say the family would be the ultimate victim in this, as the war goes on, that they're going to pay, you know, the soldiers paying the price on the front line and coming home with it, but would you say the family is probably the ultimate victim beyond the soldiers?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, the families are paying the price. You know, the families are worrying about the soldiers. The families, you know, don't really have much, you know, to go on. And when a soldier comes home, if they're not, you know, if they're not getting counseling, you know, if they're gone for a year, and people don't help these families, there's going to be a lot of families that come apart. A lot of them.
Go ahead.
The families, you know, they are victims.
Go ahead, Doug, if you had something to say.
Yeah, you know, and I know from, you know, firsthand experience of when, you know, when I was serving with the 1485th and the veterans that had served in Operation Desert Storm and Desert Shield, you know, that a lot of those families had suffered, you know, tremendous marriage breakups and divorces and things of this nature. And, you know, also, too, there was a lot of deaths, you know, because you had soldiers coming back and, you know, would kill their wives or you know, just a whole bunch of stuff, you know, a lot of abuse and things of this nature. And it's hard to explain why, you know, really why that happened. And why that went on, you know, and as I listened to these guys telling their stories, you know, of what happened before, you know, I thought to myself, oh, well, there's no way that'll happen, you know, I have pretty strong marriage and all of this other stuff. Well, I get back home and I'm fooled, I'm thinking, oh, my Lord, you know, it's, you know, the very thing that I didn't want to happen had started happening, so, you know, this has been talking with you right now and talking with Robin for me, is almost therapeutic to the point, you know, that I'm realizing, you know, how much I miss Robin and how much I, you know, really need her and love Robin in such a great way that, you know, I just feel so bad that the war has done this. And I know that there are plenty of families out there that are going through the same thing.
Okay, to end this off, both you and Robin, do you see if this keeps going on, we're both both of you guys get some therapy, that there might be a point where you guys come back together. I mean, I hate to put it like that, but I mean, is that maybe I should not go into that, but if you want to, go ahead. I'm sorry if I got a little personal.
I don't know. What do you think?
I have thought about it greatly. And I realize, that a marriage takes two to make it work, and regardless of a combat zone or whatever the situation may be, I believe that there is a very big chance of us being able to come back together and reunite. I've had this question posed to me many a times in the last little while, and I have thought that there was no way that we would be able to come back together. There again, our faith in Jesus Christ I'm going to have to say yes, because our faith in Jesus Christ is what brought us together, and, only He can allow things to come back and help us, and to help us come back together. So, I delve off into that, I really want to go. I really want her back. I don't know how it would come to pass, but I know that for me, deep down inside of myself, is I know that I need her and want her and still love her, even though I've made my fair share of mistakes. I still care and love her very much, and I think that's where it's for. I think I'll leave it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to get into that deep. How do you feel about that, Robin? I mean, what's your side of that?
Well, I feel the same way about him. I love him. I love him to death. And, I see it happening down the road a little bit. But I think, we both need to get the counseling that we need first.
Right.
Before we can make the final decision.
Well, and time.
Time heals all wounds.
Yeah, and talking to you both, I can see that, all the way through this and the breakdown and the horror and stuff like that, you guys do have a strong faith, and, it amazes me that, it can go that bad with being over there a year and coming back home, and there's still light and hope available. If the possibility of treatment is brought up, that can happen, but the lack of that probably kept you guys from staying together. So, that's probably true, right? The lack of counseling right afterwards was just, it would have been a big preventative in the breakup.
Yeah, I think so, because when I first come home, I mean, there was hardly no there was no counseling. There was hardly no one really to lean on, and the fact that, when I come back home, I had to go back to work and I had to do things to get life back up and moving again. So it was like, I tried to, when I come back home, I tried to step back into the role that I was doing just prior to me leaving from the war, and thinking that I could do that, and then all reality, I couldn't do that, and it wound up, becoming a big, a big split, because I didn't have the chance to personally same time, you know, that time itself was able to bring up, you know, I've had to learn since, you know, since the breakup, I've had to learn to do things on my own. I've had to learn to deal with the things that I've had to deal with, you know, on my own. And I've realized, you know, deep down inside that, you know, had there been more counseling when I went home, that there, come home, that there, you know, would have been a greater possibility of the marriage being able to stay together. You know, so, you know, we've ran the entire gamut of, you know, not having that support since we've been back home, and the whole nine yards, and not, you know, not being genuinely a part of the unit makes it even that much harder. So the family support really needs to be made priority in the military community right now.
Okay. Any last thoughts on that, Robin?
Suffered, you know, Robin suffered.
Texas, but did you see that at the time, or did you just see it as his duty to go do that?
Well, you know, I support him 100%. You know, I told him if that's what he wanted to do, then he should go do it. But when he already signed up, he already signed up, and then came home and told me he already signed up. Didn't he?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He went down, he was only going to talk to him for a minute. He came back home and said, well, guess what, I already signed. And I'm like, you did what? He said, I joined. I said, okay. But, you know, that's what he wanted to do. Yeah, that had been one of his dreams, and he wanted to do it. And I support him 100% on it.
Yeah, I don't see it as selfish, because at the time, you know, it was presented as the honorable thing to do. And, you know, now, Doug, your dream basically, I mean, to put it in a nutshell, your dream turned into a nightmare completely after that. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You were reading my mind, you know, because I was just sitting there thinking about that. You know, my dream had turned into a nightmare. But you know what? This has been probably one of the most educational experiences I have ever went through. I mean, it is. I have come into contact with so many good people. So many individuals that have, you know, been supportive of the situation, you know, and it's made me a whole lot stronger. You know, I think that, you know, these days that I sit here and I get in such a slump, you know, a depressive slump, you know, that you know, I realize, you know, my day-to-day routine, you know, I can't go back to work, you know, and I sit here and I'm just so depressed, I realize how much of a nightmare it is, and I'm having to fight to get my life back and struggle, you know, to try to make things right again, and it's like, you know, it's just not working properly, it's not happening, you know, to the point of you know, being happy again, and,
you know, you guys, I'm gonna finish this up. You guys are both on the road to healing, though, and you see some hope in the future. So, you know, I'm glad I got down as far as I did with the details, because, you know, this is absolutely probably one of the best interviews I've done with, you know, the both sides of it. You know, I didn't expect to get you guys both on the phone for the interview. So, you know,
but you know what? Weren't you the best one on in your unit?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was that?
He was the best one was in his unit while he was there.
Wow.
How many boxes a day did you get?
Yeah, she sent a lot of care packages to some of the guys in the unit and stuff like that, you know, so she sent a lot of things to the guys in the unit, and, you know, everybody liked that.
But I sent you the most.
Yeah.
Well, it has been very good talking to you guys about this, and I think we've pretty much covered everything that needs to be covered. I'm wishing you guys the best of luck with everything, and, you know, I'm going to stay in contact and see what's going on, because, you know, I think if you guys can get back together again, that's a miracle, but the fact that you guys are still friends after everything is That shows me that there's definitely hope for even some of the worst cases right now.
Yeah, well,
it took a while.
Yeah, it's definitely taken a while. I mean, you know, because we've been separated now for over a year, and, you know, it's been very hard. I mean, it's been very difficult, and I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's been extremely difficult. You know, I've remembered I have ran the gamut of blaming her for everything that's went on, and you know, being just very, very angry about everything that has taken place, you know, and of course it's easy to blame to me to sit there and to listen to it, because we have not had this type of communication before. So you are almost acting as a mediator. Have opened up, you know, even a door that, you know, I really didn't think was really going to be that much open, you know, and for me to sit here and to listen to her, you know, that's going to bring people back together. You know, people that hear this interview or see the interview, you know, are going to say, hey, you know, maybe there is that possibility. So I appreciate the fact, Jay, that you know, you are working as hard as you're working and dedicating yourself to this mission and going downrange and finding out those people that you know, are living their lives in a living nightmare, a living hell, and helping them try to put their life back onto a path of healing and getting back to some sense of a normalcy. So, you know, I am thankful for the fact that you are posing these questions I am glad that we have had a chance to cross paths. So I really appreciate what you have done and what you are doing and what you will be doing in the future. So I'm really thankful for that.
Well, I mean, and for me, it's an issue that became, you know, not just a news story. You know, this is a life. You know, we're talking a life, and you know, and when I talk to people, you know, I have a background as a peer counselor. I've had some, you know, schoolwork on that, and I find in the interviews and stuff that, you know, it's just so emotional after people start talking about it, and they'll call back 3 or 4 days later and go, my God, I didn't know that was there, or, you know, the feelings came out. But I got to get going, guys. I really appreciate it. Anything else you want to say, Robin?
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate it. And, you know, and I haven't seen... Now, let me ask you something, Robin. Have you ever been talked to by anybody from the press or anybody expressed interest in this?
Nope.
Well, they will now.
Yeah, that's what he told me.
I'm going to get you in touch with the National... I can't remember the name of the group. It's for the wives. There's a national support group right now with part of the National PTSD Center that, you know, I'm going to put you in contact with that, because, you know, I think on the larger scope, when Americans can sit here and read this from normal people, you know, and it's somebody that might be sitting there in the house next door, they'll realize this is big, that needs to be taken care of.
Saturday, January 14th at 9:30 a.m. Urgent message.
Hey, Jay, it's Doug. Saturday morning, about 9:45. Listen, I need to talk to you. I got something that's bothering me pretty bad. As soon as you get this message, give me a call, would you? I'm going to be tied up later on this evening, probably from about 6 to 8. So, but when you get this message, call me, because I really need to talk to you about something. I got something really heavy on my chest here, so give me a holler. I'll talk to you later.
And this message. Next message sent Saturday, January 14th at 11:29 p.m.
Hey, Jay, it's Doug. I just thought I'd call and touch base with you for a minute. But, you know, I'm pretty daggone heavily drugged. I got a few beers in me, too. I'm affected as far as am, whatever you want to call it. So, I just thought I'd touch base with you. Kind of really depressed. Whatever reason, I got careless about this damn wall. Anyway, talk to you later. out of this world, brother. Talk to you later.
End of message.
In Ohio, a 35-year-old veteran of the Iraq War was buried Saturday, a week after he committed suicide. Army reservist Douglas Barber was a member of the Iraq Veterans Against the War and had publicly spoken out about the psychological toll war takes on veterans. A month before he died, he appeared on Doug Basham's radio show.
It was my honor to volunteer to stand up and to go overseas and to do what I did. It's my honor now to stand up and to be the voice for those that can't be a voice for themselves, that the military does not want our brothers and sisters to stand up and reveal what the truth is.
Barber reportedly spent 2 years fighting the U.S. military to get counseling and for the VA to recognize his disability. Just days before he shot himself, Douglas Barber wrote, quote, "We cannot stand the memories and we decide death is better. We kill ourselves because we're haunted by seeing children killed and families wiped out."